So they told me to sit tight and watch the road and just count them cross it. And the higher the number was, the better I should feel about it, because they were all on our side.
And you saw them?
Thousands and thousands of them. Your basic ragtag army, all on foot, no transport, decent firepower, plenty of barrels, automatic rifles, some M60s, some light mortars. They crossed two abreast, and it just took hours.
And then?
We sat tight all day and into the night. Then all hell broke loose. We had night scopes, and we could see what was happening. About 5,000 guys just stepped out of the trees and assembled on the 1 o'clock road and started marching straight toward us. At the same time, another 5,000 stepped out of the brush just south of the 4 o'clock position and came straight at us. They were the same guys I had counted earlier. They weren't government troops. They were rebels. Lane's new intelligence had been wrong. At least that's what I thought at first. Later, I realized he had lied to me.
What happened? Pauling said.
At first, nothing computed. The rebels started firing from way too far away. Africa's a big continent, but most of them probably missed it. At that point, Lyle and I were kind of relaxed. Plans are always bullshit. Everything in war is improvisation. So we expected some suppressing fire from behind us to allow us to fall back. But it never came. I was turning around staring at the city behind me. It was just 300 yards away, but it was all dark and silent. Then I turned back and saw these 10,000 guys coming at me. Two different directions, 90 degrees apart. Dead of night. Suddenly, I had the feeling Knight and I were the only two Westerners left in country. Turns out, I was probably right. The way I pieced it together afterward, Lane and all the other recruits had pulled out 12 hours before. He must have gotten back from his little visit with us and just hopped straight into his jeep, mounted everyone up, and headed due south of the border with Ghana. Then to the airport at Tamale, which is where we came in.
What we need to know is why he did that.
Well, that's easy. I had plenty of time to figure it out afterward. Believe me. Lane abandoned us because he wanted Knight dead. I just happened to be in the wrong foxhole. That's all. I was collateral damage.
Why did Lane want Knight dead?
Because Knight killed Lane's wife.
Chapter 40. Pauling asked, "Did Knight confess that to you directly?"
Hobart didn't answer, just waved the stump of his right wrist weakly, vaguely, a dismissive little gesture.
"Did Knight confess to killing Ann Lane?"
"He confessed to about 100,000 different things."
Then he smiled ruefully.
"You have to be there. You have to know how it was. Knight was raving for 4 years. He was completely out of his mind for 3. Me too, probably."
"So how was it?" Pauling asked. "Tell us."
Di Marie Graziano said, "I don't want to hear this again." "I can't hear this again. I'm going out."
Pauling opened her purse and took out her wallet, peeled off part of her wad, didn't count it, just handed the sheaf of bills straight to Di Marie.
"Get stuff," she said. "Food, medicine, whatever you need."
Di Marie said, "You can't buy his testimony." "I'm not trying to. I'm trying to help, that's all." "I don't like charity."
"Then get over it," Reacher said. "Your brother needs everything he can get."
"Take it, Dee. Be sure to get something for yourself."
Di Marie shrugged, then took the money.
jammed it in the pocket of her shift, and collected her keys and walked out. Reacher heard the front door open. The hinges squealed where he had damaged them. He stepped into the hallway.
"We should call a carpenter,"
Pauling said from behind him.
"Call that Soviet super from 6th Avenue," Reacher said. "He looked competent, and I'm sure he moonlights."
"You think?"
Reacher whispered. "He was with the Red Army in Afghanistan. He won't freak when he sees a guy with no hands and no feet."
"You talking about me?"
Reacher followed Pauling back to the living room and said, "You're lucky to have a sister like that." Hobart nodded, the same slow, painful movement.
"But his eyes on her, you know, with the bathroom and all. She has to see things a sister shouldn't see."
"Tell us about night. Tell us about the whole damn thing." Hobart laid his head back on the sofa cushion, stared up at the ceiling. With his sister gone, he seemed to relax. His ruined body settled and quieted.
"It was one of those unique moments. Suddenly, we were sure we were alone. Outnumbered 10,000-2, dead of night. No man's land in the middle of a country we had no right to be in. I mean, you think you've been in deep shit before, and then you realize you have absolutely no conception of how deep shit can really be. At first, we didn't do anything, and we just looked at each other. That was the last moment of true peace I ever felt. We looked at each other, and I guess we just took an unspoken decision to go down fighting. Better to die, we figured. We all have to die sometime, and that looked like as good an occasion as any. So we started firing. I guess we figured they'd lay some mortar rounds on us and that would be that. But they didn't. They just kept on coming. 10s and 20s, and we just kept on firing, putting them down, hundreds of them. But they kept on coming. Now I guess it was a tactic. We started to have equipment problems like they knew we would. Our M60 barrels overheated. We started to run short of ammunition. We only had what we had been able to carry. When they sensed it, they all charged. Okay, I thought, bring it on. I figured bullets or bayonets right there in the hole would be as good as mortar rounds from a distance.
He closed his eyes and the little room went quiet. But? Hobart opened his eyes.
But it didn't happen that way. They got to the lip of the hole and stopped, and they stood there, waited in the moonlight, watched us floundering around looking for fresh clips. We didn't have any. Then the crowd parted, and some kind of an officer walked through. He looked down at us and smiled. Black face, white teeth in the moonlight.